got out here
this
morning.
It's still my property!
Well, this is snow, and if you think you're going to keep snow
you
off of all your property...
You don't put your snow on my property!
This is not my snow.
Yes,
this
it is.
This is not your snow.
This is my property!
This is the snow.
It doesn't matter.
Oh,
this is my
down.
Property!
Why are you,
you
being
such an
asshole?
You don't blow your snow on my property! You don't put any snow that was where you were on my property!
Okay, Gary.
Well, whether it's hot, whether it's cold, whether it's hot, Frankie's got the weather we got. Wait a minute. Well, whether it's cold, whether it's hot, Frankie's got the weather, whether or not. There it is.
All right, Brandon, how about you? Almost lost my toque.
Good morning, Prince George. Good afternoon, Winnipeg. It's the Meteorological Report. I'm your host, Dr. Joey Olney, here, not in Wells, British Columbia, where I usually live. I'm actually in camp every week, pretty much, for the most part, 200 kilometers west of Quesnel, out in the Cariboo Plateau. It's been a week of weather stories in British Columbia. We got lots to talk about, I'm sure. The show airs on C for 88.7 FM Prince George, Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., and then, again, repeats 4 p.m. Tuesday. And if you're in Winnipeg, you'll be catching us noon hour on CKUW 95.9 FM. Of course, you can always see the video version on my YouTube channel, Joey Olney, Cariboo Weather Dude. Also, my other wilderness content I've been making. And I'm hoping, because everyone's face is frozen and internet's so bad here, that so far the show is going to work on the internet connection. Frankie McDonald, co-host, and our team of meteorologists. We got Brandon Hout.
Hopefully I don't choke on popcorn here.
The radio weatherman himself from 105.7 FM, the country station in Brooks, Alberta. We got Imogen Cookie Bailey down in Victoria. We got Gabriel Berardo, the rapping weatherman in Southern Ontario. Rosanna Weigenberg is showing up, and she's down in Salmo area, Weimar. Frankie McDonald.
Frankie, the weatherman. Frankie.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frankie!
How are you doing this week? How's the weather?
I'm doing great so far. It's drizzling in Sydney, Nova Scotia. It's right now, it's raining a lot in Quebec City as of right now. And did you hear about that? TransCanada highway's damaged and Coquihalla highway's damaged and Highway 7 Lahita highway's damaged and Highway 99's damaged and Highway 30's damaged because of flooding. Damaged highways. That's why Vancouver's isolated from the rest of the Canada. It was really, really bad. And Australia's getting a lot of hailstorms lately. They're cutting a lot of trees in Amazon rainforest and things like that. It's not good for them. And the weather's pretty bad around the world. Even Japan's getting a lot of bad weather too. Tokyo, Japan, Kyoto, Japan, Osaka, Japan, and all these places, they're getting really bad weather.
Hey, Frankie, how's the weather in Sydney, Nova Scotia, where you are?
Drizzling right now.
Yeah, and for next week?
It's going to bring lots of rain next week all across Eastern North America. In Western North America, both coast, East Coast, and West Coast. And did you hear about that? There's a lot of rain headed for Tokyo, Japan next week, too.
Yes, Frankie. So people are saying that the weather here that's going on, maybe because of the HART project, maybe because of this or that. Tell us, what is going on? Why is the West Coast getting so much rain?
Because of the hydraulic atmospheric river.
Right.
Moisture coming from Hawaii. It's called a Pineapple Express.
Hope BC had the most rain it's ever had in November day. We're talking about if Hope BC is breaking rain records, I mean, there's not many rainier places on planet Earth than hopeless rainy Hope BC. We're going to talk all about that this episode. I do have Imogen Cookie Bailey's in, and I understand you're not going to be hanging around long, but I want to ask you, because you've been taking air pilot lessons, about what you've been learning about weather so far.
Don't fly in weather like this. Not with what I'm flying. I'm getting my ultralight pilot's license, which is the smallest thing you can cruise around in. It means also being licensed to basically build your own aircraft. It's kind of like flying a go-kart. So in weather like this, it is all the small crafts are just grounded. Actually, I think that even commercial crafts, a lot of them are going to be grounded. The downpour we've had has cut off parts of Vancouver, are completely cut off. We've had road washouts on the island. We've had enough flooding that's damaged the main highway that goes up and down the island, enough that there's nighttime construction doing repair work, and on daytime it's limited to single lane traffic alternating directions. So massive backups, which has also caused tanker trucks to be unable to get through. So we've been running out of fuel. So there's gas shortages all over the place right now. Should be restored within a day or two, but most gas stations are completely out of fuel at the moment.
I seen that on Global News tonight while having supper that Victoria, zero gas. There were signs of, you know, the usual gas price sign, but it was just zero because there's no gas.
Correct. Some places, pretty much what's left is a few places have diesel. There's a couple of spots down here that still have a little bit of fuel. But the panic buying, it's only a short-term thing. We're not going to be without gas for long. We're going to be able to have some tankers here within a day or two. But at the moment, it's led to a lot of panic buying. So people have been taking multiple jerry cans to the gas stations, filling up their vehicles and taking extra when it's just simply not needed.
Do you get the sense when things like this happen that civilization's hanging together by a thread?
To see how quickly people panic, yes. For what it's worth, though, a couple of days ago, we did have, when the downpour first hit, we did have a lot of power outages all over the Victoria area, all over the lower part of the island. Approximately 50 to 55,000 people were without power at one point. Some people are still without power, but most of it's been restored. Still a lot of repair work being done, but pretty much all of that power outage has been restored. Whenever our infrastructure is really good in terms of recovery, so when we have stuff like this happens, our services are on it very fast and stuff is underway. So the panic is absolutely unnecessary, but it is kind of entertaining to watch.
Ground school, it's 12 or 15 weeks for your flight training. How far are you in?
I'm doing it a second time. So I want to make sure before I write the test, I wanted to make sure I've really got this information on lock. If I get anything less than 100% on that test, I'm not going to be happy. So for the second time through, I think I'm on about the fourth week now.
Good luck. And flying is awesome. I was an air cadet and I flew. I flew gliders. And was even in a glider accident.
It is a lot of fun.
Usually I go to Brandon Houck second, our radio weatherman in Brooks, Alberta. So sorry for putting you third there, Brandon, but I knew Imogen was going to stick around. Talk to us, Brandon. Talk to us about the crazy weather that's been going on all across Western Canada this week.
Yeah, it's definitely been a wild week. It started over the weekend, and then we had the big storm, the atmospheric river setting up on the Pacific coast there, especially Sunday into Monday with the record-breaking rains and the flooding that occurred on the lower mainland. And even into Merritt as well. They had evacuations. They didn't get a lot of rain in Merritt. I think they got like 31 millimeters, but all that rain that fell in the mountains ended up in the streams and caused some big problems there as well. And everyone in Merritt had to evacuate to Kamloops and Kelowna this past week there. So that was the situation there. And then they had a really good thunderstorm go through Kelowna earlier this week as well. That same day with that storm system that had a pretty impressive shelf cloud, had some great structure on it as well. So quite phenomenal for November, that's for sure. It did weaken by the time it got into the Kootenays there, but still lots of lightning was associated with that thing as well. Now, as the storm moved into the province of Alberta, we got that storm too, but it decided to intensify and became a mid-latitude cyclone. Not quite a weather bomb, didn't drop 24 millibars in 24 hours, but the pressure itself dropped to 980 millibars quite quickly. And then it developed a mid-latitude cyclone at least. And it marched its way across the prairies. And we started off with a little bit of rain here. And it had a little bit of rain here in southern Alberta with the warm front that nudged through. And then we had the it kind of developed an area of fog. So that was kind of creepy. And then we had very thick fog. So Calgary at one time was very foggy with the temperature at zero. Meanwhile, down the road in High River, they're dealing with wind gusts up to at least 100 kilometers an hour and temperatures near 13 degrees. So quite a big temperature gradient between that area of fog and where you had the very strong winds that first day on Sunday. And then we had our strong winds develop into Monday, and especially Monday night into Tuesday. We peaked at least 82 clicks an hour here in Brooks, and in Bazzano, just about 20 minutes down the road from here, 113 kilometers an hour. And we also had wind gusts of 113 as well, and swift current as the storm wrapped its snow around. We had a little band of snow just off to the south, but that stayed just to the south, so we didn't get any snow, but we just got that wind that just whipped all day Tuesday, and it was miserable still. Standing out in that, it was like, oh my goodness. So that was the situation as we go on to Tuesday, and then the storm moved into Saskatchewan, and we had all of that snow rapidly intensify, especially in the Edmonton area, where we had at least up to over 20 centimeters of snowfall. And there's that soccer game that went on, the Canada versus Mexico game, and we won that game because, well, it's up in Edmonton, and it was minus 16 with the wind chill when they were playing soccer at Commonwealth Stadium there. So
did Team Mexico know what they were signing on to when they agreed to play a game in Edmonton in November?
I don't think they did, no. There's a picture of the Mexican reporters there, and they did not look happy at all. Like, one guy, I think his hands froze to his microphone. He did not look happy, that is for sure. So that was Tuesday night when that snow fell in Edmonton, and they had to clean out the whole. I think they're using leaf blowers to blow out all the snow out of the stands. I don't think they got it all, but anyways, they tried for sure.
You don't blow snow up here.
So your yard should be completely snow free, right?
It is snow free.
Because you're Gary, right?
And then as I said, the storm intensified into Saskatchewan, and it developed a pretty nasty blizzard with whiteout conditions from Saskatoon down to Regina, and all the highways got shut down in Regina Tuesday afternoon into the evening. So you couldn't get in or out of Regina, and they had at least 15 hours of near zero visibility in the blizzard conditions to start off the week. And then the system eventually moved into Manitoba, and then it started to kind of weaken off a bit. And then, now it's gone. It's gone off to the East Coast now. That's where it's at, eastern part of Canada now.
Yeah.
So we record the show.
I saw your live report of the high winds It was featured on the Weather Network social media there. That was quite an action-packed live report.
We'll probably fall to minus 4 this afternoon by the time this thing's all done with us here. Gusting anywhere from 80 to 90 kilometers an hour. And the same storm a nasty blizzard.
Hey there, Pete Galenko.
Hi.
So we record the show. Tonight's pre-recording. It's the 18th of November, Thursday the 18th. The show airs on Saturday, 2 days from now, and then 2 days after that in Winnipeg. So looking ahead to next week, certainly like for Prince George, I see that Saturday, periods of snow. Snow or rain at night, 0. Sunday, 4 degrees of snow or rain. Nighttime, 70% chance of showers. Monday, 60% chance of showers. Nighttime, minus 8, chance of flurries, 60%. Tuesday, minus 4, 60% chance of flurries. 60% chance of flurries at night, minus 4 on Wednesday. So, like, you know, looking for our Prince George listeners and who may be tuned in, CFUR radio. Not a great forecast for the coming week. But about our friends in Winnipeg who are listening to us on CKUW, what can they look forward to starting next week, which is this week for them?
Yeah, so it was actually on the other Winnipeg station this week as well, talking about the weather pattern. And we had that little batch of snow and the blowing snow back on Wednesday there. And now we're going to see a few snow showers here and there in the next week, but the story is going to be the cold air. I think, some areas in Manitoba might see those temperatures dive near minus 20 at times next week. And I think, Winnipeg's going to stay below freezing all next week long. Winter.
Wow.
That's very nice for them. And I guess looking as we come into next week, BC, southern BC is definitely in danger of getting more rain. And we're not out of this yet by any means. Of course, there's lots of reconstruction that's going to have to happen. So we're a long ways from being out of this. On Interior Weather and Wilderness Watchers, the Facebook group I run, someone's posted,
yes.
Bob Holowenko, who's one of the moderators and also one of the great people at Quesnel Search and Rescue. He's posted beautiful British Columbia 2021 weather bingo. Mysteriously absent, however, are earthquakes and volcanoes, but we have tornado, highway destroyed, flood, sunny, cyclone. You could get that as a line, you win. High winds, lightning, extreme heat, rain, falling trees. Next line, town destroyed, need umbrella. Right dead in the center, it says free parking, just joking. Need new umbrella, forest fire. Down next line, clear skies, drought, evacuation, tsunami. That's not happened yet this year. Hail, atmospheric river, landslide, snow, crop failure, weather bomb. Rosanna Weigenberg, if we were playing beautiful British Columbia bingo, which squares would you be putting your bean on?
Oh, God. You were kind of cutting out a little bit through all of that. We've been real lucky where we are. We were under that whole rainfall warning, but it really weakened by the time that it hit us for the next week. There's supposed to be more rain. If you put me ahead, like just put me ahead, avalanche. That's the thing I'm worried about now, because so this is basically a melt freeze layer that's just going to be at the bottom of all the snow that we have for the rest of the winter. And this has been happening in the last couple winters, and it creates a huge instability. And we keep having that, and there'll be little ones all through the season, but when it's at the base, it's a big problem in areas like where I live, where there's lots of mountains and lots of playing in the mountains. Yeah, so great. Avalanche, was that there?
It wasn't on there. You win a special
well,
prize.
Well, it needs to be.
Well, definitely, I know the captain of the Horsefly Fire Department just down from Wells got killed in an avalanche this spring, right? So, I mean, all of us in the Caribou have that deeply ingrained in our memory, of course. Of course, up here in the Caribou, it's not been all that bad either. I mean, I'm 200 kilometers west of Quesnel out in camp, and our food distributors come down Highway 16 from Alberta. But I'm a little bit worried going back to Quesnel tomorrow. Am I going to find milk for my kids? What's it like down in the Nelson, Salmo, Weimar area right now in terms of panic buying? Has that been a thing?
Sad. It is sad. We have lots of food. We have connection to Calgary where food can still come from, and people are just freaking out and the shelves are empty. Weimar, Salmo, actually super cool. Nelson, I've heard Revelstoke, Castlegar Trail, the shelves are empty. People need to calm down and make sure there's enough food for people who can't necessarily bulk buy. Because we have lots of people in these areas who are on limited income, who have income that only comes like in intermittent spurts and can't afford to buy tons of food at once. And people just aren't leaving food on the shelves for them. And we're not in a state of emergency here. Like, we're cool. We're good. We're cut off from the Lower Mainland. That's it. We're actually looking to probably come into a boom season as like Coquihalla and Highway 1 are both going to be closed for extended periods of time. And the only way through is going to be Highway 3. So we're looking to be like the golden area, and people are still just freaking out. So they need to calm down and leave food for people.
That happened with toilet paper in 2020 before the COVID-19 lockdown.
No toilet paper here. You cannot get toilet paper except in Salmo and Weimar. You still can. Oh, I shouldn't have said that, actually. Block that out, because
people will be driving like from Prince George. I was going to say, even if Highway 3 becomes the main transportation corridor, I mean, that's not great news, because it's not a great highway, and it's not heavily maintained in the winter.
It's not
your most likely highway to have a car accident on. And it's going to be more traffic. That's going
to
be
They really are going to have to up the maintenance. So, yeah, they're going to have to up the maintenance. Our maintenance has been notorious in this area. I live through it every year. It's like bumpy, slippery. Right now, the highways on Kootenay Traffic Watch, or we have a little Facebook page, is that the roads have turned into Insta-ice. So basically, we get tons of melt freeze around here, and you just get ice skating rinks. I almost died last year in one of those. My car went for probably about 250 meters, just whoop, 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 whoop. But there's cliffs everywhere. So they're going to really have to up the highway maintenance, and I hope provide more funds to the companies that are doing the maintenance. So, yeah. At their big passes, we have the highest all-year mountain pass in North America that I'm going over tomorrow morning to teach kids about bears in Creston. A little bit worried with the melt freeze that's happening on that pass tonight, but hopefully they're salting.
Tell them to take the ferry.
Oh yeah,
up over 6,000 feet have a there,
ferry.
Right?
We have an all season ferry. Yeah, but you can skip that pass if you're worried about going that high. We have a ferry. You can go north of Nelson to Balfour. You can take a ferry and go lowland the whole way.
I had that same experience in 2008 where going up from the Creston side, and then, you know, it was like 4 degrees, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then we get into a dark, shady corner. We hit black ice and we went for a roll in the van. And then when we were in the hospital in Creston, everybody who we talked to was like, oh yeah, I flew off a cliff there 300 meters, and like just the most ridiculous stories. And everybody who worked in the hospital, like all they have is like this litany of car accident stories they deal with. And and then we were like in the hotel all injured the next day, and then word kind of went around at the in the restaurant that, you know, we had this accident, and the guy just turned around and offered to drive us to Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, like it's my commute. It's my commute. Like I travel that road regularly in the winter, and the Paulson as well is horrible. But the Salmo Creston Pass is really scary because there's like, it's a really big falls down the side. There's no barriers. So it's a, you got to be well prepared to go over that pass in the winter. There is an alternate route. As I said, the Kootenay Ferry takes a little bit longer, more scenic, low level. Anybody who's questioning their winter driving skills, recommend this beautiful scenic route up north of Nelson to Balfour. Take the gorgeous ferry across, come down the east shore, don't have to go up to, you know, up to the heights of the pass. So recommend that for anybody who's coming from the coast and is not used to winter driving, to take that little scenic route.
Cheaper on gas.
Cheaper on gas because you're not going up.
The Joey Only Outlaw Band had legendary shows in Sweetwater.
Up in Ontario, people still have to remain 6 feet, 2 meters apart because of the epidemic. Up in Ontario, did you hear about City of Norlis-Grusha? People have to get special permission to go to Norlis-Grusha. You guys are not allowed in that city. You have to surrender your cameras and things. When you can't take pictures of Norlis-Grusha and any other closed cities in Russia. You can't take pictures of military base. You can't take pictures of soldiers over there.
Speaking of Ontario, Gabriel Berardo, how you doing this week?
Yeah. Basically, right, you guys in the West are having so much active weather. Well, basically, of course, everybody was having all this active weather in the West, and I actually heard you guys' stories, and I saw, like, a lot of tweets from that. Now it is the East's turn with these, with all this active weather. So, first of all, tonight into Friday, squalls right off the lakes, dumping about 10 to 20 centimeters close to the lakes. So off Lake Huron and off Georgian Bay, we will be actually seeing those squalls, especially, of course, into Cottage Country, right? Going to, of course, be at its worst there. But maybe a little break this weekend. And then our first big storm moves in next week, Monday into Tuesday. We'll be, I think, moving through northern Ontario somewhere. I think like the center of the low will be, I guess, place over northern Ontario somewhere, and will actually move south. And as it moves south, a lot of cold air behind this low, a lot of lake effect snowfall. Environment, we're actually closely, of course, watching for about 10 to 25 centimeters of it. And while that's what they are watching for. Lots of lake effect in like the next few, I guess, weeks from all these lows moving in. Speaking of an active pattern too, I mean, heading into next week and even into the week after next, like week, and even as the next month, going to be, of course, seeing a lot of lows moving in, a lot of huge storms, especially on the east, coast too, and especially where Frankie also lives also too in Sydney. He will be seeing a lot of rainfall from all these lows. Tracks of these storms are still kind of questionable, but watching just a track of lows, either I guess they'll be moving north east, possibly impacting eastern Canada and the eastern U.S., but that is still questionable at the, of course, moment as it's a bit far out to kind of tell with these model runs. But huge, of course, storms possibly on the way for next week and also the week after. Snow, rain, ice could bring all that. It could bring wind too. So if you live in eastern U.S., eastern Canada, watch out for these huge storms moving in for next week, possibly because it may just hit your you know area, either of course with huge amounts of rain, huge amounts of snow, huge amounts of ice, or maybe even a huge amount of wind. I mean, it's really hard to say, as we of course said, and just watching of course that heading into later this month, heading into next month. It's going to be very wild.
It is snow free all the way back to there.
Okay, well, this wasn't clear.
Yes, it was clear. It was cleared at 11 a.m.
Can you yell a little bit louder so everyone in the neighborhood can hear you?
I don't give a who the hell hears it.
Really? Okay. Well, then go ahead, yell louder. I have my hat on, so it's protecting my ears.
Don't blow it here anymore.
Okay, sir. Oh, okay. I won't touch your garbage can. I'm sorry I touched your garbage can. Oops. All right.
You're a psychopath.
I'll tell Chris I was trying to do something nice for him.
No, you weren't.
And you came out here. What, you think I'm clearing off that garage for me? Look at it, dumb.
Put it here.
Where should I put it?
I don't know where, but you don't do it here.
You tell me,
I don't,
Your Highness.
Where.
Tell me where to put it. Show me.
Not here.
Okay.
Winter is arriving for the eastern
and
part
I
of
the world. I got news for you. I just sent you my 2022 Atlantic hurricane season forecast. I just released my hurricane forecast today.
Here comes the story of the hurricane.
Hey everybody, here's my 2022 Atlantic hurricane season forecast. It's going to bring a lot of hurricanes to the Atlantic once again. It's going to bring a lot of named storms in the 2022 Atlantic hurricane season, starting on June 21st until November 30th, 2022. It's going to bring a lot of storms. It's going to bring 18 named storms, 8 hurricanes, 5 major hurricanes. It's going to bring a lot of hurricanes. I want everyone in eastern United States and east coast of the United States, including Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, PEI, Newfoundland, and Ontario, Quebec. You better keep an eye on hurricanes. Don't let your guard down. Keep your guard up, because it's going to bring a lot of hurricanes, including New Orleans, Louisiana, Baton Rouge, and all these places, Houston, Texas, and Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and all these places. Since the Gulf of Mexico is going to be warmer than average temperatures for 2022 Atlantic hurricane season, including Florida and all across Bermuda and all these places. It's going to bring a lot of tropical waves coming off of West Coast Africa, and wind shear is going to be low, and water temperatures going to be very warm in 2022 Atlantic hurricane season. Keep your guard up. Don't let your guard down. Keep your guard up for people living in the East Coast of the United States, Gulf Coast, New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida, Georgia, Carolinas, Maryland, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, PEI, Newfoundland. It's going to bring a lot of hurricanes Atlantic in 2022 Atlantic hurricane season. Make sure if your emergency kit's ready for that. Don't let your guard down. Keep your guard up. Keep an eye on hurricanes in 2022 Atlantic hurricane season. Best luck to you. I'm Frank Dow.
What do you think's going to happen, Frankie?
Hurricane forecast.
Is Peter Galenko going to see a hurricane?
Storms, 8 hurricanes. Yes, 18 named storms, 8 hurricanes, 5 major hurricanes in Atlantic hurricane season next year.
Peter Galenko, when's the last time you've seen a hurricane?
Wow.
Are you with us still, Peter Galenko, down in Virginia Beach? Peter Galenko.
Hey, Joey. It's been years. I haven't been. Virginia Beach gets some here sometimes, though I haven't been in Virginia Beach before this year for quite some time. So I don't recall the name of the last hurricane that I was here for. most of them when I was a lot younger. Anyway, though we had a beautiful so weather often. Today, this evening. Well, honestly, they don't always get up this far north. A lot of times they dissipate and become tropical storms by the time they get up here. Though we've had a few in my lifetime that hit pretty hard. And even some of the tropical storms, it gets pretty exciting at the ocean front. The beach is really wide over here. But the water will come up all the way down at the where there's the boardwalk beach walk. It'll come up all the way to the boardwalk where there's no sand, and over here it will come up all the way up onto the dunes and stuff. If you've been here before, it's crazy to think about on a normal day because it feels like the ocean is just going to consume the land when it gets real stormy, but it really gets like that. Anyway, and then we always have some like trees falling down and power outages and stuff when that happens, but haven't had a storm like that in quite some time. And today it has been surprisingly calm and warm, though we have a cold front coming through now, so it's going to get real chilly or comparative to the today. We had some mid-60s weather. It was like without wind, I was surprised. I didn't think we'd have that comfortable weather here again this year. Anyway, I'm interested. Do you think the East Coast of the United States is going to get any hurricanes next year, Frankie?
18 named storms, 8 hurricanes, 5 major hurricanes. I just released my 2022 Atlantic hurricane season forecast on my YouTube channel already.
All right. Well, I won't be surprised if it's completely accurate because you're usually really accurate on this.
Yeah. I just have to pipe in. This is my first time ever seeing Frankie McDormand merch. I am so stoked at all of the merch that is behind you. Can I see it closer? Book.
Yeah,
the talking bobblehead here. I got a bunch of them. Got the Be Prepared book and the action figures.
So many.
And there's the earthquake warning on the back of it there. And wow. I got all different colors of the bobblehead. Whole collection of the new generation of bobbleheads. There is some. Frankie has had some bobbleheads before this. Now they're made by the National Bobblehead Hall of Fame, featured in their museum.
Yeah. And it's
designed by Ben Campbell out in Texas. And then, of course, Be Prepared book. Good stuff. And awesome book, awesome action figure, awesome bobbleheads. And I think they bring good luck. I recommend everybody get at least the. And then I got the Be Prepared shirt too. I'm just not wearing it today.
I've been trying to buy one of the action figures, but for some reason they won't deliver to British Columbia, whatever the delivery service Ben Campbell has. So, Pete, will you sell me one of yours?
I'll consider it. I got some extras. I like my collection. I think that will be even more collectible.
Oh, pay you double.
We need some good luck up here.
All right, deal. I'll just try another one. You don't have to pay me double.
The internet's so slow in camp that I've not been able to see your faces for much of the episodes. But luckily it's a radio show. Our YouTube subscribers may miss out on some of the images tonight. Sorry about that. I mean, this far out in the wilderness, we're just happy to get, you know, anything. It's amazing. We got internet out here. It's, you know, I'm thrilled. Everybody else is complaining because they all live in Quesnel in the city. They're like, oh yeah, it's really slow. We don't even use it. And you have internet. It's unbelievable. There was something I was going to launch into next. Frankie McDonald, it's raining in Sydney, Nova Scotia, so will you not be able to get a photo of the eclipse tonight?
That means, like, it's not, if it says it's stressful, no, to not get able to get the photo tonight in Nova Scotia because of the eclipse.
So this eclipse lasts over 6 hours. I guess Olivier says it's like the longest one in 500 something years.
And did you hear about that? Over in closed cities in Russia, people and foreigners are not allowed inside the closed cities. Just the residents living in the closed city, not even other people within Russia are not allowed to visit closed cities except for living in there.
Why are they closed, do you suppose?
Because it's a restricted city altogether, like Saratov, Russia, where Kirill Bakunov lives. In Norilsk, Russia's industrial city, but it's a closed city over in Russia. You have to get special permission to go for business trips. It can't take pictures of industrial property. It can't take pictures of industrial buildings over in Russia. It can't take pictures of military bases over there. And it can't even take pictures of military bases anywhere in the world, like Canada and the United States. It's government property.
So when you do your world tour,
do you
tour,
think that's where the actual secret stuff goes on, or is it just a distraction and they're just doing their secret stuff in plain sight of another city?
Because it's a property of the government.
What are people going to do during your, because Frankie McDonald world tour is going to happen someday. What are people going to do in Novosibirsk? I can't even say the name of the city. What are they going to do there if they can't take a picture of Frankie McDonald? Maybe you'll have to sell postcards or something.
And that means they have to get special permission. That means that they have to take a picture of me, not the military property.
you'll have to like get photographs of yourself ahead of time that are signed, and then you can sell them or something.
That he's on your tour so people can take pictures of you?
Yes. That means, just imagine when the artist or the when they go to closed cities, Russia, to perform, they leave right away because it's a restricted city.
So, Frankie, your idea is in 2024, there's going to be a full eclipse in Sydney, Nova Scotia, and we're all going to come. Meteorologists, are you in? Are we all going to go see Frankie in the year 2024?
Hey, everybody, I got something to say. Total solar eclipse is headed for Sydney, Nova Scotia on Monday, April 8th, 2024. I want every single person all over the world to come down to Sydney, Nova Scotia just to see the total solar eclipse. The moon will be crossing over the sun. It will get dark outside during the daytime. And I want everyone in the whole world to come down to Sydney, Nova Scotia just to see total solar eclipse. And the total solar eclipse is officially happening in my area, Sydney, Nova Scotia, on Monday, April the 8th, 2024. I want every single person, the whole planet Earth, to head for Sydney, Nova Scotia just to see total solar eclipse. I'm Frankie Dowell.
This sounds great.
Absolutely.
If I'm on the world tour, that means I'll be returning to Sydney for total solar eclipse on April the 8th, 2024.
What's the world tour going to be like, Frankie?
Going to every dancing on stage, doing speeches about my weather reports and my past life and things like that, in my early childhood days and my early weather reports days, and dancing on stage and comedy skits on stage, every country in the world. I'll need a professional translator for some countries.
You're going to go to every country in the world.
Never
ending world tour. I love it.
Wow. Never ending world tour.
Nice. Maybe we'll even take the show to outer space. I'd like to see someday.
And if you're here with that,
this radio show being on in at least one station in every province. What about the Weimar radio station, Rosanna? Is it still going on down there in the basement?
It still is. I don't think anybody's doing any live things right now. It's just playing awesome music all the time. Like, I just basically downloaded my whole playlist, and
you should do it.
And it's awesome. And tons of people in Weimar did. But for a while, we were having radio shows and whatnot going on, basically guerrilla style. But it was pretty much like kids could just show up and take over. It was great. But yeah, it's still going. And we have the best music in the Kootenays. That's for freaking sure.
I had a good time when we played in, thanks to you and Jason setting up the show. I went down the basement. Of course, I was drinking back then. So I don't even know if what I said to the town of Weimar was appropriate or not. Because I do recall maybe not being so appropriate. But on Weimar Radio.
You were awesome. You were
on Weimar Radio, everything goes. Yeah. What you should do then is when I upload the show to the National Campus Radio Association site tonight, you should download it and then play it on Weimar Radio.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. And
that still wouldn't put us in another province, though. We still need another province. We need 10 provinces. We need 3 territories. So if you're listening to this show out there and you're like, hey, call your radio station and be like, how come you don't have the commuterological report on? And they'll say, well, because we can't say it. We don't even know how to say it. That's why we don't have it on our station. Be like, rename your show so that people can say the name. Commuterology is a science that I invented. It's the science of comedy plus meteorology equals commuterology. Brandon, what's the funniest thing in weather this week? Is there anything funny? It's been a lot of bad news.
Well, wasn't it that that soccer game up in Edmonton with the – yeah, that was funny.
The cold Mexicans.
For me.
That's hilarious. Did Canada actually make the World Cup now? Is that official? Or is that they're into another preliminary round?
I think so.
I think they are, yeah. I guess find that picture. Might put it in the background here. Hold on.
Because if that's how Canada enters the World Cup based on that game, I mean, this is – it's something worthy of a movie, maybe. It's like Cool Runnings, the Jamaican bobsled team. Something so out of the
y'all ordinary. Y'all should do a trip to Mexico and complain how hot it is there the whole time. Like, how do you live in this place? It's way too damn hot out here.
Well, I mean, they could have had it in Southern Ontario.
I think the humor might be lost. Nice. If you're wearing your Canada clothing, though.
They could have had it in Vancouver.
You get a chuckle.
They could have had it in an indoor stadium.
I was working with a bunch of people last week who were from warmer climates, and they were praying for rain. They were praying for rain the whole time because we were in snow the whole time, and they were just like, yay, it's going to be rain. And the second it started raining, they were just like, nope, we got to go home. We got to go home. It's too much.
Well, I'm timber cruising in the snow every day, and it's slippery, sketchy, a lot of blowdown because the forest we're in, it's not really hardly a forest at all. It's like the pine beetle came across the plateau, massacred everything. Half the forest or more is laying on the ground. So to get through it, you're like up and down all day on logs. So like, we're just hoping, I mean, it's at 1480 meters here. So we're well above sea level. We're just hoping that this weekend extra snow will come because it'll mean that right now there's just enough snow that when we're driving the sleds, it covers the rocks that we're about to hit. And there's just enough snow that that when you fall off of the deadfall that you're walking across, it really freaking hurts when you hit the ground because it's a ground.
And the holes.
Not enough snow.
And the holes. And the holes. The holes are not filled in at all to work in that kind of stuff that you're working in right now.
Oh, and even the logging road itself. You can imagine, like, in a few weeks, it'll be like 80 kilometers of just smooth road that the grader hits every day. Just, you know, a logging road that's quite miserable.
This shoulder season is some of the most treacherous to work in if you're working in the bush. The holes are not covered. There's nothing. Once the snow's fallen, you know where you're at. Right now, you're in that in-between season. It's falling season.
Yeah.
You're just falling all over the place.
In a month's time, we'll be able to snowshoe on top of all that blowdown, you know, and all that smashed, destroyed tree beneath us. But I mean, yeah, these aren't exactly pretty forests. And just down the road was the Plateau Fire that was 545,000 hectares. I mean, there's a lot of land out here, and there's a lot of this dead forest that's, you know, I mean, people are kind of, there's a lot of things that could be said about logging, but, you know, one thing that's for sure is the country here is a ridiculous fire hazard, and it will happen again. So I don't feel that bad creating some brake lines in it. It's a bad forest.
Creating the brake lines is definitely not bad. Post-fire, dealing with those kind of things, when you're dealing with like insect kill and stuff like that on a mass scale, like what you are dealing with in those kind of areas, it's hard because it is a fire hazard, but you also want the biological material to go back into the soil. And it does create some structure, even to have that stuff on the ground, does create stuff when it goes back into the soil that will help remediate the fire or the flooding. That will slow the rain down. And then when you go in and you clear, like, say, the trees out of a forest fire zone and the roots and whatnot, it can create more hazards as well. So it's like it's a tricky situation.
But I think a big
that you're
part
dealing
of
with after post-fire logging.
Southern BC's problem this week has largely been, I mean, you look at places like Merritt, where after a large wildfire and you have that kind of ash on the ground that turns into this sort of like weird clay like mud almost, and then the rain just sloughs off down it. And yeah, I mean, you look at Lytton, it's gonna have, the canyon's gonna have, I mean, I don't know why they'd even bother to rebuild a highway there. I mean, this is gonna happen again and again and again and again. And maybe not in every highway in BC, but the canyon in particular where that fire has gone through around Lytton, is it's just the ground deformation is brutal and it's not going to hold. And that's the way it is. I wonder what you think about this, Rosanna, because you're a forest biologist. So what we're doing here isn't full-on clear cuts. It's actually a quilt work of 40 meter by 60, 80 meter blocks. And what I do like about it is in the blocks I've been looking at that were done 15 years ago, a lot of the forest that's regenerating on the edge of it in, you know, in what was the cut blocks, is coming back very well. And I think that having, you know, the smaller blocks basically allows for some cooperation within the, you know, the forest ecosystem. So I'm just curious what you think about, for this area at least, it seems to be a pretty good solution, not having large cut blocks, but it's also a very flat country.
Well, for that area specifically, like if it's the area that I'm thinking of, there was a lot of fire historically. And there, like from the reading I've been doing recently, and I'm by no means an expert on this, there was a lot of fire done by First Nations to help to mediate big fires happening like we are having now. Historical, like using fire to basically not have giant fires like we're having was a practice of First Nations for years and years and years. There's nothing wrong with that. And we can also use clear cuts to like mimic fire. The thing is, you are taking a lot of biological material that would go into the soils. And then we also do these big like slash pile fires, which can be good for pest management, but can be bad as well because you're not putting that stuff back into the soil. So I'm a big fan, especially in areas that have been fire mediated, of using like conscious clear cut like methods that mimic fire over the landscape and leave enough material that you are putting stuff back into the soil and also allowing the soil to keep its structure. Because that is a big thing when it comes to like stopping flooding and whatnot. You want that soil structure to keep intact. And you need live trees. You need live trees, but you also need to not just disrupt everything that's happening there, especially when we're in drought conditions and then flood conditions and then drought conditions and flood conditions again.
It seems to me the reason why what you're saying is why this may actually be working here too, and maybe at least somewhat of a good plan. When I just look at these small 40 by 60, 80 meter cut blocks and just the way the forest is regenerating itself into it, of course, in the very middle, they're just very small trees, but it's just so naturally. And it, like you say, it hasn't removed everything. It's allowed for some mother trees nearby to sort of help the family along. And I'm hopeful. I mean, basically, in the present situation the forest is in, I've seen so far in the forest one moose in the 4 weeks I've been in the bush here. We see them on the waterways. We see them in the openings. We see them on the clear cuts. We see them on the logging roads. In the forest itself, there's so much deadfall, they don't even want to go into it because it's a kill zone. The wolves catch them in there, it's over.
I was in the same area that you were, except I was just surrounding the area around that burn. I worked south of that burn. I worked north of that burn this summer. And we were there for 2 weeks. I didn't see any scat. I didn't see any sign. It was really creepy, the lack of wildlife that I saw in these areas. And this was not the kind of deadfall that you're talking about. These were mass plantations that have happened in the wake of the pine beetle coming through, of fires coming through. And it was staggering, the lack of wildlife that I was seeing. And most of that was in the burn, but it was also in the big plantations adjacent. So for me, it's landscape planning on a level that includes, like, obviously with the burn, there's nothing left. But with what's left, it's like what you're talking about, smaller cuts. Openings are important. They've always been important and they've happened naturally. We are now suppressing fire. We always have. We can create openings that mimic what fire has done and still help to ensure that there's still some biological material that's going, some carbon that's going back into the soils. And those pine forests, though, that's just heartbreaking. Like I can't even, like, it's so sad. Like, it's 20, 30 years later after the outbreak, and they are a giant fire hazard and they are not amenable to wildlife.
They don't seem to be recovering well on their own either. Like when you go into the blowdown areas, I mean, there's enough of the the ground, I mean, the sunlight's just not getting through and nothing's able to really easily grow through it. I mean, that's not all the forest everywhere we've been, but that's a big portion of what I'm seeing day after day out here.
It's so devastating. It was so devastating. It's not something that's going to recover to what it ever was. It's not something that's going to probably recover in our lifetime. It's going to become a whole different landscape. Like the pine beetle infestation was devastating. And then what I have spent a lot of time looking at is a lot of the pine plantations that have been planted. Like, well, we had a giant pine beetle infestation. Let's plant mass pine again. And it's also not doing well. It's pine grows really fast, but it's also really, really sensitive to drought, to disease infestation, to all sorts of problems. And so we basically, about 20 years ago, when all that pine stuff went through and they salvaged, you know, and they've been continuing to salvage, deciding to plant mass monoculture, not necessarily a great idea. Allowing deciduous forest to be within those areas is one of the ideas that people bring up. And I am definitely becoming more and more on board with, because those forests grow faster. They are competition for the plantations, but they make them more resistant to disease, fire, all the things that we are, you know, fighting right now. But they, you know, they don't allow you, like they make those go away through herbicides and through brushing. And short term, it's great, but long term, I find it that that's not a really great way to go. You know, like in any kind of agriculture, we find more and more that diversity is the key. And planting mass monoculture is just, it's basically becomes a biodiversity wasteland and susceptible to fire and susceptible to drought. Plus, you got all these trees that are one size. They all just, the fire just goes. At least if you allow the deciduous to grow, you've got multi-sized trees. You've got moisture retained in the soil. It's not my specialty, so I'm a little bit talking out of my ass right here, but these are my impressions as a biologist and as somebody who's out there every day.
Now, what I'm going to tell you from being out there every day is that the pine beetle is not gone.
Oh, it's not. And neither are any of the other beetles. Like we have spruce beetle, we have spruce beetle, we have Douglas fir beetle, we have pine beetle, especially in the East Kootenai. Pine beetle is definitely not gone. And in the boreal forest, it's freaking taken off. People are fighting to stop it every day. And we also have, like, we have our subalpine, fir that is just being taken out. And it's not a loggable one, so people don't necessarily care about it. But it's so important to alpine ecosystems. The pine beetle all over the world. Relations to the pine beetle, not the pine beetle, but these little tiny wood boring beetles, they are the canary in the coal mine for climate change. They just take off everywhere, all down through the US, everywhere you go where there's pine, everywhere that there could be any of these tiny little beetles, they are just destroying, because once they're released from these temperature restrictions that they have, they're just going off.
Yeah, they need several weeks of sustained minus 30, minus 40 sort of weather. And yeah, it's out here. Like, we're seeing it, and it's a matter of time before those pine beetles rise up again. And it was amazing, like, with the way the caribou forest was destroyed. We only got 3 minutes left here. The caribou forest, when it was destroyed.
Oh, I'm shutting up.
I couldn't believe that I stood on top of Mount Murray and Wells in 2005 and looked out, and all I seen was red forest for as far as the eye could see. And it was just bizarre. And to this day, we're dealing with the dead standing timber. Frankie McDonald, we got 3 minutes left. What's on your mind, buddy?
The Douglas fir beetle.
My social media is, my Twitter is at Frankie McD. My Facebook is Frankie McDonald. And my Instagram is Frankie McD 1984. My TikTok is Frankie McDonald 1984. My Snapchat is Frankie MACDON. My Clapper is Frankie McDonald 1984. And my Twitch is Frankie McDonald 1984. My LinkedIn is Frankie McDonald. And my YouTube channel is Dogs and Wolves.
Good to see you, Frankie. Good to see you, Peter Glanco. Gabriel Berardo, we got a few minutes left. You got a 2 minute long weather wrap by any chance?
Oh, yeah, no. I did not have one planned for this week after I had a huge one last week.
Where can people find you?
I have one in the making, but not for this one. No, next time actually maybe. This weekend is my birthday, so you know I make it a birthday shout out from Frankie. Hopefully this Sunday.
Happy birthday!
That would be cool.
Happy birthday from Frankie Down.
Yeah. I know. Thank you. Yeah, I know. Right? I'm gonna get one of those birthday shout outs from Frankie on Sunday, maybe, you know, and then maybe, you know, get like the weather, like, you know, network. And I'm like, look, I'm also gonna meet my favorite storm hunter, like Mark, you know, Robinson. I haven't ever met him in person yet, and I hope to in the next few weeks. All of my followers know how much I've been dying, like, to meet him. Like
day 70 of posting the same
message. I honestly think so. I mean, yeah. I think it's actually longer than that. Once I actually missed a few days, so I had to just kind of tweet like all in one. I had to tweet for those days. Like, it was nuts.
Well, time's up, guys.
Maybe somebody too. You have quite a list.
That's the way she goes. The way she goes. You've been listening to the Meteorological Report on CFIR 88.7 FM Prince George, or on CKUW 95.9 FM Winnipeg, or on the Joey Only Caribou Weather Dude YouTube channel, which if you're watching that today, sorry that all our faces are frozen, but at least you got a show. We're working out of the wilderness here. A radio station being made in the middle of nowhere. A radio show, ex nihilo. We'll see you next week. Please tune in. We'll be back. Thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for all my meteorologist reporters. We'll see you next week.
Okay. I threw a piece of cardboard in your recycle bin, and you took it out and put it on the hood of my car. Because you don't want recycling to happen on your behalf for a piece of cardboard?
You have your own can.
No, I don't. Why are you yelling?
All right, Brandon, how about here to Red? We're almost lost by toot.
Well, whether it's hot, whether it's cold, whether it's hot, Frankie's got the weather we got. Wait a minute. Well, whether it's cold, whether it's hot, Frankie's got the weather or not.